Well, we have been studying about the sixth commandment, and we know that there are a lot of implications in relation to the sixth commandment. We have been talking about euthanasia, assisted suicide, and those things. And today we are going to talk about capital punishment, which is another very difficult and very a serious subject we need to think about. You may be wondering how long I'm going with the sixth commandment. And there are quite a number of more issues we have to deal with. I think we have issues like biblical view of suicide or biblical view of war in the battle zone. What are we supposed to do? And so some of those issues are still left and lingering. And so you need to continue to pray for me so that I will be able to properly think about all these issues. A few years ago, there were continuing flares of controversies over capital punishment in Australia because of Singapore government's decision to carry out an execution. Despite many appeals from dignitaries from all over the world, including Australian government, a young man who was an Australian citizen, Van Tong Nguyen, was convicted of drug trafficking in Singapore and was hanged on the 2nd of December, year 2005. Mother's tearful appeal for mercy was not heard, and she was not able to see her son very, very briefly. I'm not clearly sure about this, whether she was allowed to touch his body or not. But if she was able to touch his hand, probably it was a very short amount of time before he was executed. Maybe a day before he was executed. Even today, there are people waiting for their own executions in Changi prison. A careful punishment, a capital punishment, is a legal form of punishment in Singapore. 27 people, I investigated it, 27 people have already been executed this year. This country has the second highest per capita execution rate in the world, and the Bahamas, the number one country. Of course, our study is not of the execution rate, but of the justification of capital punishment. Capital punishment is also called the death penalty. It is the execution of a legally imposed sentence of death upon an individual as a punishment for a crime often called a capital offense or a capital crime. Most recently, on September 22nd this year, so only about a week ago, about 10 days ago, the state of Georgia in America executed a convicted murderer, Troy Davis, in a case that drew international attention because of claims by his advocates that he may have been innocent. Historically, the judicial execution of criminal and political opponents was a phenomenon of nearly all societies. And we must not ignore that it was often also used as a means to suppress political opponents or dissents. Both democratic and non-democratic countries have used the death penalty in their judicial system, so it doesn't matter what sort of political system we have. Among democratic countries around the world, most Western and Latin American countries have abolished the capital punishment, except the United States and Guatemala and most of the Caribbean countries. While most of democratic countries in Asia and Africa retain it, among non-democratic countries, the use of the death penalty is very common. In most places that practice capital punishment today, the death penalty is reserved as a punishment for certain murders, espionage or treason, including treason or part of military justice. In some majority Muslim countries, certain sexual crimes, including adultery and sodomy, carry the death penalty. In many countries, drug trafficking is also a capital offense. In China, human trafficking and serious cases of corruption are also punished by capital punishment, a death penalty. In militaries around the world, courts-martial have sentenced capital punishments also for cowardice, desertion, insubordination, and mutiny. capital punishment is a contentious issue even today. Supporters of capital punishment argue that capital punishment deters crime, save innocent lives by preventing future murders, and that the death penalty is justified because allowing murderers to live while the victims cannot is unjust. Opponents of capital punishment state that capital punishment has not been shown to deter crime more than life imprisonment, frequently violates the most fundamental human rights with wrongful executions, and discriminates against minorities and the poor. Probably Amnesty International is the most well-known organization promoting the abolition of the death penalty. Since this international organization convened an international conference on the death penalty in Stockholm, Sweden, in 1977, 86 countries have abolished capital punishment for all crimes. 11 countries have abolished death penalty for all but exceptional crimes such as war crimes. 25 countries can be considered abolitionist in practice. They retain the death penalty in the law but have not carried out any execution for the past 10 years and more, and are believed to have a policy or established practice of not carrying out executions, making a total of 122 countries which have abolished the death penalty in law or practice. 74 other countries and territories retain and use the death penalty, but the number of countries which actually execute prisoners in any one year is much smaller. 714 people were executed in year 2009, and 527 people in year 2010. And of course, as you can imagine, China is not included in this survey. And the statistic from China is not included here by Amnesty International. It estimates that China has executed thousands of people in the same year. In March year 2004, a delegate at the National People's Congress in China said that nearly 10,000 people are executed per year in China. These countries have used various ways to execute the prisoners. Some countries, like Saudi Arabia and Iraq, are using a method of beheading, and the USA electrocution or injection, hanging in Egypt and Iran, Japan, Jordan, Pakistan, Singapore, and other countries, and lethal injection in China, Guatemala, Philippines, Thailand, and USA, and shooting in Belarus, China, Somalia, Taiwan, Uzbekistan, Vietnam, and other countries, and stoning in Afghanistan and Iran. We have studied that the Sixth Commandment commands us not to kill. That is a very simple, very short statement in the commandment. How should we understand the issue of capital punishment in relation to the Sixth Commandment? Does death penalty contradict the Sixth Commandment? How should we view of the capital punishment? We understand that a lot of opponents of Christian faith, or a lot of people who raise these objections to the biblical truth argue that God is God of the Bible is a barbarian, and he sees it like a barbaric. That's why in the Old Testament we can find a lot of instances of capital punishment. Even there are commands and orders, direct orders from God to practice capital punishment upon certain crimes. How should we view of this particular issue in the light of the Sixth Commandment? First of all, we need to begin with the arguments from the abolitionist group. Arguments from anti-capital punishment groups. The UK is not free from the talks about capital punishment, by the way. The Guardian newspaper reported on the 4th of August this year, year 2011, about 2 months ago, about a possibility to discuss and debate in Commons about death penalty. Death sentence was abolished in the UK in 1965. In 1998, the MPs rejected its restoration during the passage of the Human Rights Act. However, Sir George Young says ignoring strong public views would damage democracy, and if it is signed by the required 100,000 supporters or more, then the cross-party backbench business committee will decide whether it will be debated. So it seems that even though it is not lawful to execute anybody in our judicial system in this country, it seems that still some people are thinking about it that much. This issue has not been cleared away from everybody's mind. There are MPs who support the restoration of capital punishment against the child killers, murderers of police officers, and the most serious and significant criminals. Anti-capital punishment proponents are in general talking about five reasons that compel them to be against the capital punishment. Number one, they say that the necessity to end the cycle of violence. They argue that the death penalty only serves to further brutalize society. Vengeance is a strong and natural emotion, but the demand for a life in retribution should have no place in a civilized justice system. It violates the right to live. They make an emphasis on paying attention to root causes rather than crimes themselves, but we need to pay attention to the root causes such as poverty and injustice. They also say that death penalty is the premeditated and cold-blooded killing of a human being by the state in the name of justice. So when we are talking about premeditated murder or killing, we tend to think about it in relation to individuals' acts, so premeditated murder and so on, but the anti-capture proponents advocates are saying punishment that actually capture punishment is an act of premeditated murder done by the state, the government. Second, they say that capture punishment is not an efficient method to deter hard crimes. They argue that murders are often committed in the heat of the moment. Not much thought is given to the punishment at that particular time. Third, they say that we must consider the value of human life. At the same time, we must recognize the human capacity to change. Most of these criminals are changed by the times when they are executed. Then, they are different people. They were murderers and they were cold-blood murderers when they killed some people. However, through their imprisonment and so on over the years before, until the time of their execution, actually, they have been very much remorseful. They regretted what they had done before and they felt really sorry for what they had done against someone or, their victims and so on. And they became different people. And then why now we want to execute those individuals? Why do we have to kill them when they are changed? Fourth, they say that death penalty is prone to being unfairly administered. Many argue that those facing capital punishment are not the worst offenders, but merely the ones who may suffer from prejudice against them, for example, racism, and or with the fewest resources to defend themselves. It reminds us of a saying that the sinful rich are not convicted easily while the innocent poor are often targeted. The death penalty is often used as the ultimate denier of human rights. The fifth reason is this. They say that we must not ignore chances of making errors. No justice system is infallible. There are very many instances where the wrong people have been convicted and killed by the state. Misjudgment. Maybe sometimes even evidence can be fabricated intentionally. How can we possibly justify that sort of execution done by a mistake, by errors, by fabrication? The death sentence is irrevocable and can be inflicted on the innocent. And once after a person is executed, then there is no second chance for that person. It's gone. Therefore, capital punishment should be removed. There are also people, obviously, who argue for the justification of capital punishment. Their arguments are this. From pragmatic point of view, it has been said that capital punishment is justified if it, number one, prevents the criminal from repeating his crime. Number two, deters crime by discouraging would-be offenders. This sort of notion of punishment in general is that, as a foundational matter of justice, criminals deserve punishment. In fact, criminals or murderers did not think about their victims. They did not show any compassion to the victims. Therefore, whatever they have done against those victims must draw equal punishment. And their act of criminality, a criminal act, deserves punishment. And the punishment should be equal to the harm done. So if someone has killed somebody, then this person must receive equal level of, at least equal amount of, or equal value of punishment in the name of justice. Otherwise, where is justice? If we lose the notion and concept of justice from our society, then unfairness may become a norm for our society, and there is no way for us to have law and order in this society. From practical point of view, capital punishment is based on analogy that it is to the political body just as self-defense is to the individual. The reasoning is that in dangerous situations, the individual is justified in protecting himself by self-defense with deadly force. Since the society or the political body is like a large person, society too is justified in using deadly force through capital punishment. If we know that most conservative figure shows that 1,000 murderers have killed more than 1,800 plus people, we may understand the reason why there are people accepting capital punishment as a legitimate means to remove the criminals completely from the world. It is also true that many of the released killers committed deadly crimes again. One of the most early written statements of capital punishment from the Lex Talionis, or eye for an eye perspective, is from the 18th century BC Babylonian law of Hammurabi. And here is one particular article. It says, in quote, if a builder builds a house for someone and does not construct it properly, and the house which he built falls in and kills its owner, then that builder shall be put to death. If it kills the son of the owner, then the son of the builder shall be put to death. End of quote. The punished one has not received more than what he has done. So if he has killed the owner of a building, then builder is going to be killed. If the owner's son is killed, then builder's son is going to be killed. So whatever the equal value or equal amount of punishment must be given to the offender. So he took someone's life, and now it is his turn to lose his life. It seems that only such a deal is fair deal, people say. Otherwise, there is no justice. They argue that while the victims lost their opportunities to live, the murderers continue to enjoy their lives. There is no justice served at all. Otherwise, if there is no justice, then obviously sufficient amount of punishment was given to the one who committed the crime. So these are the arguments from both anti-capital punishment or the proponents or pro-capital punishment groups. Then let us think about some practical difficulties. Arguments from the abolitionists need to face some challenges by their opponents. First of all, if we have to blame the society, Let me suppose that someone has killed somebody, and then the lawyer for him begins to argue that we have to look at his background. He was grown up in a broken home, and he was grown up in a social kind of ghetto area, socially ghetto kind of type of lifestyle. And as a result, there was no role model. And as a result, he did not get good education at home. Besides that, he dropped out of the school. As a result, he did not get any good positive influence from a school system. But he was associated with the bad guys. But it all of them has to be credited to his case. If we have to blame the society and one's family and upbringing backgrounds for crimes, then how can justice be served properly? If everything else but the criminal has to be blamed, then how can we build any society with law and order? And whatever crime or offense is committed, and we'll say, well, this is a problem of this and problem of that, except the criminal himself, offender himself. Second, if we talk about the right to live for the criminals, then our question is, where is the right to live for the victims? Where is victims' rights? While we are talking about the criminals' rights, human rights, then where is the human rights for the victims? Why are the rights of the criminals so important while the victims' rights are brutally denied by them? Third, the law makes a distinction between premeditated and non-premeditated crimes. So there is a clear difference between murder and manslaughter. Therefore, it is not fair to treat all murderers as if they are the same without considering the evil intention behind the premeditated murderers. Fourth, administrative errors cannot provide sufficient reasons to abolish the system. It is also true that pro-capital punishment groups will have to face the challenges, of course. Fifth, concerning the analogy of self-defense, we must recognize that self-defense with deadly force is justified only when there is no alternative open to us. We know that we do not have to use deadly forces against the intruders into our house, but out of all those options we have, somehow we have chosen deadly force to deter that intruder from coming into our house. As a result, that person is dead. Well, why other options were not chosen? This means that we must see whether any alternative to the capital punishment is open. Of course, one of the options is to give him a long-term sentence. Second, one of the logical fallacies in the case of Hammurabi's legal system, eye for an eye, is that a son of the builder has to die for the crime of his father has committed. So if the owner of the building was killed because of the builder's errors, and if that is the case, then builder is going to be killed. But if the owner's son is killed, then builder's son has to be killed. But in fact, the son has to die for his father's offense, not his own offense. And he did not build the buildings wrongfully. So it seems that there is a logical fallacy. The application of the eye for an eye law appears to be very hard to be practiced in exact forms. The builder himself is intact, except that he has to lose one son. Another logical difficulty is that a strict formula of retribution is hard to make. For example, a few terrorists killed thousands of people on 9/11. Only just a handful of people committed that crime. Let me suppose that all those terrorists were caught and arrested. and they were sent to the court system. Taking those a few terrorists' lives is technically not a punishment in the same kind, because thousands of lives were lost because of these handful of people's crimes. There is another complication included in the capital punishment. How about mentally ill patients? There are cases that mentally ill patients were executed. The National Alliance on Mental Illness believes that persons who have committed offenses due to states of mind or behavior caused by a brain disorder require treatment, not punishment. Amongst all these challenges and controversies, one thing that we must not forget is the victim's right. I think oftentimes we do not talk about it. Why do we hear so much about the killers and so little about the victims and their loved ones who are left behind to pick up the pieces? So many people who were released by parole, despite their previous crimes, including murder, have recommitted more crimes, including murders. Then how about the biblical views on capital punishment? What does the Bible talk about capital punishment? Especially the Old Testament talks, I think, a great deal of capital punishment or death penalty. The Mosaic Pentateuch requires this punishment for many transgressions, both civil and religious. God killed Onan, who refused to give a child to his brother's name. God killed Lot's wife for not obeying his word. There are so many examples like this. Thus, some liberal theologians cannot tolerate such barbarism in the Old Testament. So they call God as a primitive God who needed more evolutions. So they are talking about evolution of God in the Old Testament or in the Bible. However, even in the New Testament, we can find a story of God's death penalty. How about Ananias and Sapphira in Acts chapter 5, verses 1 to 11? And they were killed by God. So we have some examples from the Bible. First of all, God dealt with people harshly based on religious and spiritual reasons in the Old Testament. When the children of Israel followed other gods, in fact, we read it from the book of Leviticus today, those people were punished with death sentence, especially in Leviticus and Exodus chapter 22, verse 20. When they used black magic, wizards, and strange spirits and so on, they were punished as well in Exodus chapter 22, verse 18. Human sacrifice. There are some people who offered their own offsprings to their gods. So human sacrifices were practiced. And those practices were strictly forbidden in Leviticus chapter 20, verses 2 to 5. And if anyone offers his child to foreign gods, strange gods, he deserves capital punishment. Blaspheming the name of the Lord was a serious crime in Leviticus chapter 24, verse 16. Second, God also dealt with sexual sins by capital punishment. Adultery was a dangerous sin in the Bible according to Leviticus chapter 20, verse 10. We just read it a few moments ago. That was such a serious crime before God's eyes. So in the Old Testament era, it drew God's attention very much. And adultery was a really dangerous one. People could lose their lives because of this sin. Incest was dealt with by death penalty in Leviticus chapter 20. And homosexual sin was not tolerant in Leviticus chapter 20, verse 13. And all kinds of unethical and immoral sexual sins were punished by death penalty in Leviticus chapter 20, verse 15, and Deuteronomy chapter 20. And the prostitution was not allowed in Leviticus chapter 21, verse 9. It also attracted a death penalty. Third, God dealt with judicial crimes by death penalty. For example, murderers were to be executed in Leviticus chapter 24, verse 17. Kidnapping was punished by death penalty in Exodus chapter 21, verse 16. And perjury also was severely dealt with in Deuteronomy chapter 19, verses 15 to 21. Fourth, unethical behaviors were punished with death penalty, especially the right manner and attitude towards parents were duly emphasized. For example, if a child curses his parents, he was to be killed in Exodus chapter 21, verse 17. Abusing one's parents was not tolerated in Exodus chapter 21, verse 15. The disobedience to parents was a deadly offense and crime in Deuteronomy chapter 21, verses 18 to 21. People argue that, having heard all these things, people argue that we are not living in the Old Testament era, but in the New Testament. They say that, yes, we understand that in the book of Leviticus, in the book of Exodus, adultery was such a crime that attracted death penalty, but we are not living in the New Testament, Old Testament era. Don't you remember that Jesus did not kill the adulterous woman in John chapter 8? So they argue. Jesus told also that his followers ought to love their enemies. And how can we kill them? Therefore, they argue that there is no place for death penalty in Christian ethics. They also say that the law of love overrides all the previous laws. We understand that the Lord had fulfilled the law. Thus, a few things appear differently from those olden days in the Old Testament. However, we must recognize that the Lord coded the sixth commandment. He quoted the sixth commandment in Matthew chapter 5, verse 21. And when he quoted the sixth commandment in Matthew chapter 5, 21, in fact, it seems that he strengthened the meaning, implication, connotation of that commandment. It says this: "Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not kill." So thou shalt not kill is the sixth commandment. But in fact, in Matthew chapter 5, verse 21, Jesus is expanding the sixth commandment by saying an additional statement here: "And whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment." So it seems that he is reinforcing the teachings from the sixth commandment here by adding this additional statement. If Jesus wanted to abolish the commandment, this was the place, and he could have done it. He could have said, "Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not kill, and I must tell you that everything is fulfilled, therefore this law is not going to be applicable anymore." He could have said it right there. But instead of saying something like that, instead of canceling that commandment, in fact, he expanded it by saying, "Whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment." And besides that, he expanded the meaning of killing. Not actual murderous act, but in fact, if we have hatred toward our brothers, in fact, we have already committed the sins of murder. So in fact, he amplified the meaning and significance of this commandment. As we read from Exodus chapter 20, verse 13, we do not find the second half of Matthew chapter 5, 21. Only the sixth commandment is given in Exodus chapter 20, verse 13. Jesus explained the commandment by adding it to the commandment itself. Besides, he talked more about the severity of God's judgment in the following verse. There is no indication whatsoever that Jesus had canceled the sixth commandment, in fact. Especially, Jesus quoted the sixth commandment right after he said, Matthew 5:19. He says this: "Whosoever, therefore, shall break one of these least commandments and shall teach men so, he shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. And whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven." Isn't it interesting? He was quoting, he said, if anyone breaks any one of these least commandments and teach men, then that person is going to be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. And if anyone shall teach and do those commandments, then the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. That is given in verse 19. Then a couple of verses later, verse 21, he's talking about the sixth commandment. So he's not canceling the commandment, but in fact he's emphasizing the importance of God's commandment. It strengthens the view that the capital punishment has a solid theological and biblical basis in the Bible. You may begin to think about certain objections in your mind. Wait a minute, okay? Just wait. The reason that we do not apply the Old Testament examples exactly in the same way today is because we are not living in the theocratic country. We are living in a secular country. God is not forming our government. Romans chapter 13 verses 1 to 4 is an example. It says, why don't you read Romans chapter 13 verses 1 to 4. Romans chapter 13 verses 1 to 4. Okay, let us read it together, shall we? Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves a damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is a minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. For he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Amen. So here, what this verse is talking about is this. When Paul was ministering on this earth, he was not living in a theocratic kingdom just like Israel lived in the Old Testament times. But instead, in fact, Israel was under the oppression and occupation of the Roman Empire. So the laws of the land was actually Roman law. It was not theocratic law. It was not the law, the judicial law was not based on the Bible. It was the Roman law. And here Paul says in verse 1, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers. For there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. And he says, even though we are living in the Roman Empire and we are being ruled by the Roman law, Paul says, this power must have been ordained by God. Then verse 2, whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God. And then latter part of the passage, verse 4 says, the person in authority, he is the minister of God to thee for good, but if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain, for he is a minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. In other words, execution of the laws of the land does not depend on the church authorities, but the authorities of each government. And we are not the revolutionaries who are trying to overturn the governments. Instead, in fact, we do recognize the ordination of those governments by God himself. It is now the role of the state or the government to deal with the criminals through their proper judicial system. So each government, each country does have its own justice system, judicial system. There are proper legal systems, and we have to go through those legal means in order to deal with the issues. Then we may talk about the fundamental reasons for capital punishment. First, the abolitionists of the capital punishment are against the death penalty because human life is sacred. I'm not sure how you think about it, but I think this is a good thing, right? Human life is sacred, therefore we should not take somebody's life despite the fact that they are murderers or they are just hardcore criminals. However, paradoxically, the reason that the Bible required certain crimes to be dealt with by death penalty was because of the sacredness of human life. That sounds like a contradiction. Why don't you turn your Bible to Genesis chapter 9, verse 6. Genesis 9, 6. Okay, let's read it together, shall we? Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. For in the image of God made he man. Amen. So what this verse is saying is this. If someone has killed somebody, then this person, the murderer's life has to be taken away from him because human life is sacred. The person who was killed was made, created according to the image of God. And that sacredness was destroyed by this criminal. Therefore, that's why this person must receive the penalty. That's what the Bible is talking about. So it's interesting. The abolitionists of the capital punishment are against the death penalty because human life is sacred. But in contrast, the Bible says, that's right, because human life is so sacred, if someone has taken it away from somebody, then that person's life must be taken away too. In a sense, while the abolitionists are uplifting the value of the life of the murderer, God values the life of the victims and punishes the culprits accordingly. Secondly, though the abolitionists say that there is no deterrence effect in death sentence, it seems that Deuteronomy 17 verses 12 to 13 disagrees to it by saying, "And the man that will do presumptuously, and will not hearken unto the priest that standeth to minister there before the Lord thy God, or unto the judge, even that man shall die, and thou shalt put away the evil from Israel, and all the people shall hear and fear, and do no more presumptuously." There is definitely a deterrence effect. One time I was flying from one place to another, and I do not know where it was, and I was sitting in the airplane, and there was another person sitting right next to me, and we began to talk, and he told me that he used to work in Saudi Arabia like 7 years or 8 years and so on. So I thought, my goodness, living in Saudi Arabia without liberty and freedom, it must be like a prison. So I said, "You know, probably you didn't enjoy your life in Saudi Arabia." And he said, "Oh, no, I really enjoyed my life there." And so I said, "But why? You know, I have never been to Saudi Arabia, but, you know, my just assumption is that it must be like a prison. There is no freedom." And he said, "No, that is not true. In fact, it is much safer and a very good place to live." So I said, "Why do you say so?" And he said, "You know, at least there is no crime on the street. If someone does something, immediate punishment is going to be given. If someone is stealing something, you know, his hand is going to be chopped off in a public place. So you dare not steal somebody's personal belongings. And if you kill somebody, you definitely know that your life is going to be taken away. So definitely there is no low crime rate. If you compare the crime rate between Saudi Arabia and London, you will see the answer to this question, whether severe punishment does have a deterrence effect or not. And I will just leave the matter with you. Then concerns over capital punishment. Understanding the capital punishment as legitimate means to execute social justice does not mean that home and family and the society are free from their responsibilities. We have seen many cruelties committed by murderers and robbers. At the same time, We often hear about their backgrounds, their family problems, their difficult upbringings, abuses they suffered when they were young, and many other social issues which have influenced on them one way or another, very negatively. The society as a whole cannot be totally exonerated from the crimes made by its members. The behind the stories of those hard criminals are often heartbreaking stories. I think I understand this. It is because I have been working. I used to work with those people who had prison records. And quite interesting thing is that I thought hardcore criminals are really ruthless and so bad people without any sense of guilt in their conscience. But that is not so. They do have their own soft spots. And some heartbreaking stories are told by their own fellow men. You know, oftentimes these big guys are crying as well, like just like babies. And some of the stories that I have heard from them were really heartbreaking stories. Some of the kids, they were kicked out of their homes about 6 or 7 years old, and they did not have any place to go, so they stayed in the train stations and begging, and so they grew up in that environment. They did whatever they had to do for survival, and eventually they got involved in criminal activities for getting some means and so on. Some of those people, I remember one particular man, who killed a person and who spent in a prison nearly for about 20 years. And his stories are just horrendous. How parents abused him when he was a little child. And because of abusive parents, he could not stay at home. And literally every night he was beaten. And he was so scared of going home at night, even though he was only 5 or 6 years old. And all the stories are just horrendous. Many of these culprits have grown up in so-called social ghettos. They were abused and they are less privileged people. I have read stories after stories about how they have struggled just to survive. It must speak to all of us very loudly. That means that some Christians may talk about capital punishment, you know, how it is a good thing for us to have capital punishment because it has definitely crime deterrence effect and so on. Therefore, we must be able to remove those guys from the society totally and so on. But if someone wants to argue in that way from his perspective, he should be able to know that Christians do have social obligations too. Social obligations. They need to turn their eyes, Christians, they need to turn their eyes upon people who may need their kindness and assistance. There are so many selfish believers whose attentions are only fully given to themselves. As long as they are healthy, as long as they are wealthy, as long as their kids are going to good schools and having good jobs and so on, there is no care. Social obligation, there is no sense whatsoever. The Lord Jesus spoke to his disciples to become the light and the salt of the world. One common characteristic of both light and salt is that they themselves have to be melted away. Church Christians do have social obligations. It requires self-sacrifice. It requires losses and pain. If a man or a woman has not given himself to less fortunate people, he is not worthy of talking about capital punishment, in fact. What have we done for those people who do not have the things that we have? We need to become Christians who are willing to fall into the ground and die in order to bring forth much fruit, as corn of the wheat does. What have we done to make differences in our loved ones, believers' community, and society we are living in? Another consideration must be given to the judicial system to protect the innocent from being falsely accused. There has been a saying that the rich are always able to find a way to escape a guilty verdict, and the poor are easily caught, and even innocent poor people are falsely accused for the crimes they have never committed. Especially in multicultural societies, quite often racial and social status issues are brought up against unfair verdicts. Therefore, within our capacities, we need to make sure that there will not be an innocent victim through injustice of the judicial system. You know, what I am quite often praying for is that the Lord will raise godly Christian judges around the world, around the country. It is because maybe members of parliament may make new laws and they may pass a lot of new legislations and so on. However, it is the judges who interpret them. Through interpretations, in fact, the judges do have power to make new laws. The interpretation is quite a funny kind of word we may use. I hope that the Lord will raise some of our people to be future judges in this country, and they will be known for justice and fairness. And we need to pray for judges. Even though the abolitionists argue from various perspectives, there is no question that there is a biblical basis for capital punishment. Jesus never canceled it. Capital punishment is a serious warning to the potential criminals. We know that human mind is so evil. As a result, even though they know the consequence of their crimes, including death penalty, they are still doing it. The purpose of capital punishment in the Bible is not to reform the culprits. It's not to reform the culprits, but to show the justice of God's righteousness. I am not saying that we must reinstate capital punishment in the judicial system of this country. I'm not saying that let us go forth and let us demonstrate on the street to restore the death penalty and so on in this country. It is something that this secular government will have to decide. It is not within my power. All I am saying is that we cannot accuse God for the notion of capital punishment in the Bible. God is the God of justice. Isn't it true that when Jesus comes again, we are waiting for his second coming and we'll be delighted to see him face to face and we'll be taken into eternal kingdom of God. However, what is going to happen to those people who are going to stay behind? Eternal punishment. Justice needs to be served. So capital punishment in the scripture is talking about the justice of God. Whether we have it in our country or not, it's not something that we are trying to promote here. All I am saying is that if there is anybody who is talking or speaking against God simply because of the notion of the capital punishment in the Bible, I want to tell that person that his notion is wrong. God is the God of justice and God of righteousness. If God condones, if God does not punish the evilness and sinfulness of man, then where is his righteousness? What is this difference between from us? What is the difference between justice, a just God, righteous God, and sinful man? So all I want to tell you is that we should never accuse God for the notion of capital punishment in the Bible. It does not show us the primitive nature of Christian faith. In fact, it talks about the most noble nature of God's justice and the nature of God. In order to avoid this sort of question, you know, we do not like to talk about this sort of thing. Who takes delight to take somebody's life away from him? I'm not taking any delight to do it. If I have to say that let us kill somebody, I'm not going to say, I'm so happy to say it. Probably I want to be the last person to talk about it. So rather than we again dwell on negative side of it, I think there is a positive side of the sixth commandment, thou shalt not kill. What is the positive side of God's commandment based on the sixth commandment? What is his instruction that we have to learn by studying the sixth commandment? Well, what is the purpose of the law? Ten commandments. The purpose of the law is to love God and to love our neighbors. If we love our neighbors, why are we going to kill our loving neighbors? The commandment, the negative side of the commandment, thou shalt not kill, is a clear indication that oftentimes we do not dwell on the positive side of the commandment. We have failed to love our neighbors. Maybe that has to be a part of our social obligation as Christians in this world, to be the light and the salt of this world. And I hope that this message has cleared some of the thoughts, your questions away. And one lesson that we should be able to learn is that even though God gives us negative commandments, there is always the ultimate goal or purpose of the law. And the Bible makes it very clear. The goal, or if we summarize the whole commandments of God, is to love our God and to love our neighbors. Therefore, let us not rejoice by not killing somebody. That is not enough. I have never killed anybody. I have never shot anybody. No, that is not something that rejoice. If we really, truly rejoice in the Lord, then in fact, when we love our neighbors as ourselves, finally we are fulfilling the sixth commandment. Let us look to the Lord in prayer.